Hello and welcome back to another episode of Casting the Net, where we seek to dive deeper into public health topics and untangle the wide net that it casts on our community. We are here today. We are your local health department here in Tyler, Texas. And today we have our very first guest hailing from our very own environmental health department. Jonathan Brodena is one of our level two registered sanitarians. He's a local Tylerite. He received his bachelor's in health science at UT Tyler and is actually enrolled currently in the business administration program at the University of Texas at Tyler. Welcome to Casting the Net, Jonathan.
Oh, thank you. It's a privilege being here. I really enjoyed talking to you guys. Well, we still got to talk, but it's nice being here with you guys.
So it's safe to say you're a BA?
A BA?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Business administration.
Oh, almost. Right now I'm working on my master's.
I was thinking another kind of a BA. But
I'm currently working on my master's in business administration, but you know, there's levels to it, so I'm still working on it. Not fully done, but it's something I want to get done here in the next couple of years.
And then the date that we're recording this interview, there is another event.
Oh, yeah.
That's about to happen.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
your life.
My wife is pregnant. So, till this day, you know, it's April 2nd, she is 36 weeks pregnant. So, she's about to pop anytime soon. So, I'm super excited. So, the day that she's supposed to deliver is May 1st. But, of course, you know, it could fluctuate within 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, we just don't know exactly. But, we're getting our bags prepared now.
That was exciting news. I was going to put that in the intro, but I was like, I don't know if he's ready to divulge that. I was like, if so, I'll let him.
Yeah, man, that. I'm excited.
As a soon-to-be father, you're never ready.
So yeah, no, exactly. That's what I've been telling everybody. I'm prepared, but I'm not ready. Like, I got the nursery all, like, decked out, everything.
Yeah. Oh, everything's officially in. Installed, put
everything's
in,
officially
open.
Installed. You know, the drawers that has to close, the little baby wipes, diapers. You got the little cleaning kits. Get the baby diaper change station, the closet, all the clothes. But I don't know if I'm mentally ready.
So in a few years, it's kind of a teaser for one of the topics of this interview. In a few years, you may be taking your future child to a child care facility.
Yeah.
It's one of the locations that's covered by our environmental health department.
Exactly.
Kind of puts a different perspective.
Exactly. You know, no, exactly. Part of my job, you know, of course, we deal with childcare inspections. And yeah, in the back of my head, I'm like, is this a good place to to bring my child? And the majority, yeah. I mean, if they have permits, they're okay, mm-hmm. right? If they didn't have permits, you know, or if they weren't good, you know, we would suspend the permit. So for everybody listening, if they have a permit, they're good daycares. But for me personally, you know, I know what I like, and so I'm kind of keeping an eye on all these daycares. I know I still have some time left till, you know, the baby goes into a daycare, but I'm definitely keeping an eye out for that.
You know, I'm from a generation where older relatives or friends of the family, older relatives, may be impromptu daycare at the house.
Exactly.
And that's not always a suitable location. I don't know if that's the best way
to
put
it nicely. That's soft serving it right there.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. I know this will be my firstborn. So, of course, she doesn't have any relatives yet. Mm-hmm. But she does have a cousin who's 9 months older than her. So she will be, you know, with her the majority of the time. Mm-hmm. So they'll have a really good friend to be around with. But it is her firstborn. Maybe our second will be raised by our firstborn. We'll see about that.
But this topic is just one of several environments that's covered by our mm-hmm. NetHealth Environmental Health Department. So
exactly. Yeah, we have multiple departments in environmental health, or we call it EH. Multiple permittings, right? Daycares is just one of it. Actually, daycares, we cover two permits inside of it. We have the food, and we also have the daycare portion.
Well, but I would say before we dive into that, could you maybe for our listeners, so we know internally here at NetHealth, we know you as a registered mm-hmm. sanitarian, but for the layman, they'd be like, well, I've never even heard that term.
Yeah.
Some people I've come to know that is double for a local health
inspector. It's a health inspector. Yeah. It's just a fancy title, registered sanitarian. just fancy title for a health inspector. But there's levels to it, right? They start you off as a registered sanitarian in training, and then you move up to level 1, 2, 3, 4, and then all of a sudden you become director. With me, I just leveled up to level 2. So at that part, you know, I'm able to start training other registered sanitarians. But a registered sanitarian is pretty much a public health specialist who identifies risks and enforce environmental regulations, health, and safety. Pretty much the inspections are key to preventing and stopping foodborne and communicable diseases outbreaks at that source. So pretty much here as a registered sanitarian for Net Health is we investigate, evaluate, and eliminate environmental conditions that pose potential threats to the public health of individual citizens, neighborhoods, and communities within the jurisdiction of Environmental Health Department, or Net Health, which here we cover Smith County and also city limits of Bullard.
That's a pretty big jurisdiction.
Yeah, it's a pretty big jurisdiction. What's that, seven cities?
So I want to go kind of two ways with what you just stated. So one, with Smith County, to give everybody listening a quick geography lesson of the cities and the unincorporated communities that are in Smith County. Mm-hmm. So there are technically 9 cities in Smith County. So you have Tyler, the county seat. You got Tyler, Lyndale, Winona, Chapel Hill, Arp, Troop, White House, Bullard, which there's a little sliver, a little portion of Bullard that's actually in Cherokee County. But the bulk of Bullard is in Smith County. And then you have Noonday. Noonday is an actual city. And a city being they have a mayor, a city council, a formal structure of municipal government. But then that also includes Flint,
which is a community.
So Flint and Noonday, Gresham, they're in the same vicinity. So Gresham and Flint are communities, Noonday being the actual city. But then other community, you got Swan in the north. Owentown, Garden Valley, going on I-10. But everything that's geographically within the borders of Smith County is within your coverage area, within your jurisdiction.
I think you have like a little bit of Starville over there on 271, you know, going towards,
towards Winona.
Towards Gladewater.
Winona, going towards Gladewater on 271. Yeah, one thing that Thomas and I, that we learned during the pandemic is that there's a little bit of Overton that's in Smith County.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of Mineola that's in Smith County. Because this all goes back to where the geographic or the physical GPS location of a residence, of a business. Like you can physically be in Overton, in the city of Overton, but depends on which part of Overton. You may be in Smith County, you may be in Gregg County. Mineola, you may be in Wood County, or you may be in Smith County.
Yeah. Or even like addresses, right? So in Chapel Hill, I actually take care of a lot of the Chapel Hill area, and it's predominantly Tyler address down there. So it's really weird how it's all structured.
So this all goes to mean that we don't make the rules.
Yeah, exactly.
The other aspect of what you mentioned before, of the different services that Environmental Health covers, where you said y'all evaluate and you inspect and you coordinate, I would like to address a myth that hopefully you can dispel.
Sure.
That I've heard through the grapevine. There are one of the popular general topics is that the Environmental Health Department is out to close a restaurant or to close a business, or they do kind of a secret shopper, mystery shopper.
Yeah. Oh, you're jumping in right into the exciting stuff.
Customer survey. I'm a hidden customer, and then out of the blue, you take off your costume. And, aha, gotcha.
I got you now.
Because, I mean, I think you're hitting on something so important, though. I mean, so many people, even when they think of just the health department in general, mm-hmm. right? It's like you know, we're so much bigger.
Yeah, and a lot of people get scared, you know, when we walk into these establishments.
Yeah.
But by the end of the day, we're here to educate. We're educators first. So actually, believe it or not, in our office, the S word shut down. It's actually a naughty word. It's not a good word to use.
Yeah.
So we don't really use the word shut down. You know, we use voluntary closure or suspend permit, mm-hmm. but we never use shut down, especially in a report. You know, especially if something goes to court, we will never use the word shut down just because that's it's a very negative.
It's taboo.
Yeah, it's a very negative term.
But would it be safe to say your mindset, not just you, but everybody, your coworkers within the environmental health department, your mindset is not to find reasons to close a business.
Correct. Yeah, we try to work with the operators as much as we can before it ever gets to that point, which I know later on we'll discuss more about preventative, right?
Sure.
So we're here to prevent any communicable diseases or any outbreaks, anything mm-hmm. like that. So we look at we pinpoint the imminent hazards. And by doing so, we're able to evaluate it based off a risk.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, by the end of the day, we're there to educate and to prevent any of these imminent hazards from going on in
right.
our community.
Because, I mean, these are the establishments that our community and our people that live in our communities,
exactly.
they're eating at, you know? So
mm-hmm.
it's like, this is all for the betterment and safety of the people in our community.
Exactly. And just for an example, right, there's a big difference between a commercial facility in a residential home,
mm-hmm.
and I'm guilty of that, right? So even like eggs, raw eggs, I'm guilty of putting my raw eggs wherever I want in my refrigerator at home. But when it comes to commercial, there's certain ways you have to separate it, right? You don't want to put raw eggs over ready-to-eat food items, because what if raw shell eggs fall down, right, on top of fresh-cut strawberries? Well, at that point, you've already done a cross-contamination. So you might already have salmonella in those strawberries by the time you get to it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big difference between the commercial and the residential, which we can also, you know, deep dive more into it, because it's not just about the restaurants. It's even about pools or even daycares. There's a huge difference on how you navigate something at home and also in a commercial setting.
So to the average Smith County resident, since environmental health is focused on Smith County, how would you categorize the different environments, the different types of places that a registered sanitarian goes? Because you mentioned food establishments.
Mm-hmm.
We touched on daycares a bit earlier. You mentioned pools a while ago. How many total categories would you say that y'all cover with all of your services?
Oh, so like the permits, how many permits we do?
Well, not just just to educate everybody that you're not just doing food and restaurant inspections.
Yeah, yeah. So
there's many other things that our environmental health
correct.
Department does.
Yeah. So environmental health with net health, there's so much we cover. The main one that a lot of people recognize us from are food, right? So we have three kind of permits for food. We have the brick and mortar, which is your average restaurant with four walls. And then we have the temporary food permit application. And then we have the mobile food units, which are your food trucks. So that's just for food. Then we also take care of daycares and the food portion. We also take care of the schools, which, of course, we look at the cafeterias. We look
now
at
when I say
pools.
Schools, you mean public schools?
Yeah, public
and
schools,
private
schools, correct.
Yeah. Charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
So a K through 12 school.
Correct.
A school district.
Yeah, or even colleges.
But then you also do Tyler Junior College,
mm-hmm.
UT
the University.
Tyler, Texas College.
Correct, yeah,
okay.
All of them. We look at their kitchens as well, and they're all under the food permits. And then on top of that, we also do pools, right? So we look at all the commercial pools that are not residential. So apartment complexes, hotels, HOAs, water parks.
So I'm not balling like this yet, but if I had a pool in my backyard, mm-hmm. just my family use, personal use, y'all would not.
No, we wouldn't come out and inspect
you,
it
you
at
don't,
all.
You don't care. about
not
my personal.
Not that we don't care. We'll educate.
But you wouldn't come
bit.
To inspect. It wouldn't be part of your routine.
Correct. Yeah, it wouldn't be part
process.
No, man, that would be way too many inspections. I mean, even my parents, they have an in-ground pool, and remember how I was telling you about difference between commercial and residential?
Mm-hmm.
Huge difference, right? In a commercial setting, you have to have a fully fenced in-ground pool. You need to have X amount of feet of concrete before you get into the pool.
So expectations are so much higher.
Yeah, expectations are so much higher.
If you want to throw a kiddie pool in the back of your yard, you know, go for it. But if you're going to have people coming and jumping in it, you know, from the community, the standards
absolutely.
Are going to be so much higher.
Absolutely. You got to look at it like this, right? Whenever you go into any of these permitted establishments, you want to walk in there with the same health that you have when you walk in. Or whenever you walk out, you want to have the same health you have when you walk back in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Did I word that correctly? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So same thing with the restaurant, right? You want to go in, you want to enjoy the food and not get sick by the time you get out. Same thing with the pool. You want to go in, get out, and not be sick.
Yeah. So for pools, just so I grasp my head around, this would be pools that are at hotels, pools at
HOAs,
apartment complexes.
Apartments.
HOA being
Homeowners Association.
Homeowners Association. So,
yeah, so there's multiple
So neighborhood
families.
Complexes.
Mm-hmm. If it's used for multiple families, then yeah, it would need to get a permit with
okay.
health. On top of pools, we also do general nuisance, general complaints. So septics, aerobic systems, grease traps. I know each city here in Smith County, they have their own city officials that take care of it. But then there's a lot of area that's not city limits, right? So the ones we take care of are the ones in the county. So let's say your neighbor has a septic system and it's overflowing into your property. You can actually complain to Net Health or the health department, and we'll be that middleman between the court and the company that needs to fix it. So we pretty much just go out there and give you a X amount of day notice to get it done, and then we'll send it out to the JP court, and then from there they can handle the rest if it's not compliant.
Because it's an issue that's happening on somebody else's property.
Correct.
That's
correct.
Coming onto your property.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to have like a septic overflow and it's not bothering anybody in your neighborhood or even your neighbors, you're fine for a little bit.
I think the smell would bother everyone.
The smell is definitely going to bother some
even
people.
If it stays on your property.
Correct. Yeah, so you definitely need to get it fixed. And normally we'll give you some time to get it done. But it's something that needs to be done effective immediately.
Because it is a health hazard.
And then with that, you can also harbor a lot of mosquitoes, especially during the summertime. You definitely don't want any mosquitoes around your property.
And you definitely, this is something that I learned. You don't want to grow your own mosquitoes.
Yeah, absolutely. You definitely
you
don't want to
realize that
own.
You may be growing your own mosquitoes on your own property. Because I remember a female mosquito can lay her eggs in a bottle cap, so a bottle of water. You unscrew the cap, flip it upside down. You leave it outside. It rains one day. You don't realize that bottle cap is still out. That's all the amount of water that a female mosquito needs to lay her eggs.
How many?
I don't know what the number is. I want to say it's hundreds of new mosquitoes that she can lay.
A mosquito farm?
You're farming Ooh. Mosquitoes.
In a bottle cap?
Uh-huh.
You hear that, folks? Pour out your still water, your stagnant still water, and get your septic systems taken care of.
Exactly.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
But that's public health in action.
So those are some of the things we look at. So even whenever I get called out for a public nuisance complaint, man, I definitely make sure I take my work boots. I have specific boots for that kind of stuff.
Oh, so you don't know where you may be walking.
Yeah, you have no idea. You might be
what the landscape
may
be.
Some caca stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
For those listeners that don't know what caca is, that's poop.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to be stepping into.
Yeah. For our listeners, me and Jonathan were Hispanic, so we say caca.
We say caca time.
Yeah.
Now, the African-American individual here, I'm flashing back to my childhood a bit because I want to, pun intended, I want to dive a little bit more into pools.
Yeah.
Because another aspect of an environment that y'all address is splash pads, mm-hmm. public water features. Exactly. So Splasher was its name, but I don't know if Splasher's still there at Bergfeld Park.
So they have all right, I have a question.
The fountain, not the fountain, but you step on a button or a pad to make the actual water shoot up.
But like, is Splasher, some have said did it used to be a seal? Is it a dolphin?
I've always associated it to be a seal.
It's a seal. Okay.
I think it's always a seal. As a little kid. It could be.
Now, I've always I'm thinking Flipper. There was a show called Flipper.
Splasher the Seal. That makes sense. They probably name it like something with an S.
As a kid, I've always named it, like, I've never called it Bergfeld Park. I've always called it El Parque de la Foca. De la Foca. Which is a seal. So I always thought it was a seal.
You're probably
the
right.
The Park of the Seal.
I'm the outlier seal here. Park. You guys have been in Tyler a lot longer than I have.
So. But yeah, there's splash pads at Faulkner Park in Tyler. Not to be confused, there's a Faulkner Park in Lindale. Mm-hmm. There's a splash pad at the playground in White House, the city park. But just say there's not just pools that y'all cover.
Yeah, so some of those splash pads aren't permitted, don't need permits. So we would permit the splash pads that have a recirculation water. So if there's a pump and it recirculates the water, then yeah, it needs to be permitted because you're using the same water. So it needs to be chlorinated at some level. Now, if it's, I believe the one at Bergfeld Park, that one's not recirculating. I think it's just water coming out. And then from the out, it just goes straight to sewer. So that we don't permit because it doesn't recirculate.
Is that the acronym, the PIWF?
Yeah. So we call it a PWIF, but it's PIWF.
PWIF.
Public Interactive Water Feature.
Okay. Yeah, no. I didn't know what that acronym stood for. I remember seeing that on our website.
But pools, they're a whole another animal, man. You really gotta change your gears a little bit when you go from a food inspection to a pool inspection, just because they're so different rules and regulations.
Are there some days where you may do a food inspection and a pool inspection mm-hmm. the same day?
Correct. Like, yeah. For example,
is that fairly common, or that happens kind of every now and then?
It's fairly common because normally pools, you get them done in the morning time, and then you'll do a restaurant in the afternoon time. Because the sun, especially in the summertime, it gets too hot out there for you to be there all day. But you also have facilities such as hotels that have two permits, which is the pool and the continental breakfast.
Do them both the same visit?
So you'll go in, you'll knock out the pool portion, and then from there you can knock out the food or vice versa.
How long, you can do either or. How long does a pool inspection typically run?
It depends. Some are better than others. Mm-hmm. So ideally, you want to walk into a pool inspection. Well, it'll take about 45 minutes to an hour knocking that out. But there's some times where, you know, the water may not be chemically balanced where it needs to, or they're missing some signs, or they just need to do something, or such as shocking the water.
Is that something that you would take care of? Or
yeah, I would get them to take care of it right then and there. Okay. Especially if they're open up to the public at that specific time.
It's like you have to
fix it now. And that's what we also look at. They're required to have logs up to 2 years. So that way we can look at it and check, okay, your pH wasn't good yesterday, but it's good today. Or like, hey, your chlorine hasn't been good for the past 2 weeks, and so therefore it's probably still not good right now. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things we look at. So whenever I talk about chemically balanced, I talk about, you know, the pH. Is it at the right pH level? Chlorine, is it at the right chlorine level? And also cyanuric acid, is it at the right level that it needs to be?
Wait. What was that word before acid?
Cyanuric.
Cyanuric.
C-Y-A, cyanuric.
Wait, keep spelling C-Y. I'm trying to build up my Scrabble vocabulary.
C-Y-A-N-U-R-I-C, I believe. Cyanuric. Cyanuric acid, yeah. So cyanuric acid, it's one of those that it can be kind of complicated. So a lot of the times there's cyanuric acid inside the chlorine tablets that you add inside the pool. Now, you're allowed to have cyanuric acid in a pool that's outdoors, but an indoor pool, you're not allowed to. Cyanuric acid pretty much helps protect the chlorine in the water from the UV rays from the sun. So it helps maintain it. Yeah. Now, if you have too much cyanuric acid, the only way you can get rid of it is by draining and scrubbing the pool. So it's like...
So the residue of it
may... bad. It could be good and bad.
In the bottom of the pool?
No, so it sticks to the plaster. So it can definitely stick to the plaster. So technically it's good that you have a right level of cyanuric acid because it still protects the chlorine. But if you have too much of it, it can really leave you with some rashes on your skin. So that's why we inspect it. We check it out. And if they have way too much, they can drain partially some of the pool, or they would have to drain the whole pool completely.
So this is starting to become a nostalgic flashback interview. Let's doing this interview now. Pool season, as y'all affectionately call it.
Pool season's coming up.
Starts Memorial Day weekend, give or take. The majority of most public pools, they open around Memorial Day weekend. Back when I was growing up, I'm just showing my age. Back in the day. Back in my age.
Back in my day.
When the pools would open after school is out, because our school would not end until the first week of June, second week of June. So June through August was, if there was a swimming pool open, public or private, residential or commercial, especially if I have a diving board, I was jumping in it, but... I remember there were some days when I was a kid swimming in swimming pools where later that day after I'd already dried off, I would see a rash come up on my skin. And I didn't know. I didn't know about cyanuric acid when I was
you thought that was normal.
10, 12, 15 years old. Yeah, like, I thought it's part of swimming. Pool. Yeah, I'm going to end up being a little itchy. I'm going to be hungry after I finish swimming. Yeah, but yeah,
I think that's a normal thing for everybody. You get a little hungry after you get in a pool.
That's going to wear you out, man.
Yeah.
Feeling itchy after getting out.
But it could be due
to think about that.
A high amount of cyanuric acid or just too much chlorine. Also, there's a thing called the chloramines, where there's a lot of chlorine that will stick around. Like a lot of the residue that shouldn't be in there. That can also cause some irritation.
So kind of a related question. Going into a hotel swimming pool, if there's a strong chlorine smell,
that's
not
a good
thing.
No,
that's not a good thing.
Yeah, you don't want to walk into an indoor pool.
If I'm walking down the hallway in the hotel before I actually
open
the door
and
go into the swimming pool.
That's not a good sign. Now, it's normal to have a little smell of chlorine. I mean, because there's obviously going to be some chlorine in there. But when it's like super strong, that's not a good thing whatsoever.
Are there establishments that maybe who don't know the chemical... makeup of these things that don't really know
all
too
much. And then they
try to offset to be like, if I add more quick, because like I've been to places, I went to a spa one time and they had outdoor pools and then they had their little spa enclosed area. And I mean, you walk in there and it was like getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
And I was like, either they're hoping maybe we can offset, you know, the amount of people that come in and how dirty it is by putting more of this stuff in there. Because maybe you have somebody that oversees these kinds of things that don't know too much about it.
The smell will let people know that, we're really clean.
Yeah, we're really super clean. Yeah, but you're saying it's actually like a negative thing. You know?
Yeah.
It's like more doesn't mean good.
So every pool, permitted pool at least, needs to have at least one CPO. A CPO is a certified pool operator that go through a training that's good for 5 years. Every pool is supposed to have at least one CPO overseeing the basic pool operator. Normally, the basic pool operator is like the maintenance person or lead maintenance. So BPO, pretty much what they do, they go in, they check the water, and if they need to add a little bit of chemical, they'll do so. The CPO, the certified pool operator, they oversee that operation, and they will make the decision whether they need to add more chlorine, more shock, more of the cyanuric acid, whatever they need to add to put it back into the pool. And the majority of these pools, they don't change their water as often. It's normal, most of the time it's the same water that they have for a couple of years due to the fact that it's very expensive to fill up your
entire pool.
And it's like, it's a huge process. I mean, sometimes it could take up to like a few days just to fill up a pool. So they'll use the same water. Now, if you manipulate it in a negative way to where like you're already messing up the water and you don't know what you're doing. At that point, you might as well just drain the whole thing. It's going to be costly, but I mean, that's what you need to do in order to, for you to keep the public safe. Because it's not good that you have a lot of chlorine in there. And a lot of times, like when you walk into a pool, you can ask them for their logs. It's a public record. You can ask them for logs like, hey, has this pool been chemically balanced? But one thing I will say, like if you're going into a pool, you definitely want to make sure you read your signs. Have y'all been to a
pool? You mean the no diving sign?
Yeah, the no diving, and then there's like saying
the depth of of which end of the pool you're at, and making sure the fence closes fully.
And there's actually some new signs, pretty much saying like no pets allowed, no glass allowed in the pool yard.
Yeah, I've seen those more.
And there's one more that recently, says,
the no glass, which I would. Okay, me working for the Northeast Texas Public Health District for 12 years as of the day that this interview is occurring, that I would assume the majority of people would know not to have a glass item near a pool, because if that glass breaks, whether it's clear glass or whether it's green glass or blue glass, if it breaks, that glass is going to be fairly hard to see. If
no, Terrence, it doesn't float. It'll just sink to the bottom. It'll
no, I mean along the outside. Oh. Just walking around the pool, not even getting in. So not having a glass bottle in the pool itself.
You know that's how people think, though.
That reminds me of the glass. That reminds me of this meme I saw the other day. You know how, like, you were into wrestling, right? Stone Cold Steve Austin, Heidi would crush cans and chug them. Well, this kid, he grabbed two glasses of beer.
Two bottles and smashed them.
He smashed them on top of his head.
I guess he didn't drink the beer,
and there was a pool
huh?
right there. It was a funny video. Yeah. But, yeah, no glass allowed inside a pool because, of course, people are walking barefoot all the time.
Right.
There's also another sign that says extended breath-holding activities can be dangerous, right? So holding your breath underwater. It's dangerous. But, I mean, those are kind of stuff that's common sense.
That's right? A childhood ritual when you get into a pool with friends.
Or, like, whenever you're playing
chicken.
So you can
hold your breath the longest.
Like, chicken wrestling, and someone's, like, on top of you, and then the person in the bottom is, like, deep bottom. In water. You're, like, you just straight up in the water. There's also another one saying baby diaper changing stations may be done within 6 feet of the pool. Who's going to change someone's diaper, you know, right there on the deck? But still, I mean, that's common sense. There's rules there for a reason. That means it must have happened at some point.
So there's, okay, that specific example, that would be, to me, that would be a difference between a commercial pool and a residential pool.
Exactly. Like no dumping in the pool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if it's a family get-together in somebody's backyard, residential pool.
Oh, yeah, they're going to have glass, or they're going to change a diaper within 6 feet. They're going to try to see who can hold their breath the longest, right? I used to do it all the time. But technically, in a commercial pool.
At a public pool that's used by all different people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or even diving signs, right? Obviously, you shouldn't be diving if it's less than 5 feet of water.
4 feet of water.
Mm-hmm. But, of course, you can't rely on common sense. So that's why we
That's why the signs exist. Yeah.
That's why we have those signs.
It's like somebody did it.
There's a sign. Yeah, yeah. There's a reason why there's a sign.
There's a reason the sign exists.
So that's why I'm saying, like, pools can be a whole animal itself just because there's so many rules and regulations that don't even have to do with food. I don't think there's a single code that pertains to the same one.
Yeah.
You kind of have to, like, close your eyes a little bit and just change your gears and prepare yourself to go from a food establishment to a pool just because it could be very intensive.
Back to what you had mentioned earlier, the CPO, y'all are able to actually qualify somebody to be.
So we actually qualify somebody to be a basic pool operator.
Okay.
So we teach those courses, which actually they're coming up.
So that's the starting point, right? Mm-hmm.
Of being starting point. So the basic pool operator is good for 1 year. And then there's a CPO, which is a certified pool operator. Those are the ones that oversee those basic pool operators. It's kind of like the same thing as with food, right? You have someone who has their food handlers, which is your average employee, good for 2 years. And then you have your certified food managers, who is the manager itself, who's good for up to 5 years.
Or they may be a kitchen manager or head chef.
Exactly.
Like they they're in charge of the food,
of the little preparation
processing space.
But those trainings, where do they go to get those trainings? That's outside of
so the food handler. So we can teach the food handlers as long as we have at least 20 people. Same thing with the certified food managers. We can teach a course up to 20 people.
Okay, so they can get
we can teach the certified food managers and the food handlers. It's just the thing is the way everything's working now. Everybody wants to do online. Mm-hmm. And technically, it is cheaper if you just do it online too. But, you know, a lot of people do want that face-to-face experience. So we're more than happy to do a class. We just need to have the right amount of numbers to do so.
Now, what about justifying having one of those classes? Mm-hmm.
Now, correct. What about the basic pool operator? Are those in person?
Or yeah, so those are all in person.
A virtual option for those?
I know during the pandemic, there was a virtual option. But now we pretty much enforce everybody to come to our class. Now, we require at least there to be at least one basic pool operator per location at all time. Now, the CPO, there needs to be at least one person overseeing operations at a specific pool. So the CPO doesn't have to be there every single day, but they should be able to report within an hour or two. I forget which one.
I want to make sure I'm updated on my acronym. So then you have the BPO.
BPO is your basic pool operator.
You have the CPO.
CPO is a certified pool operator.
Do you all have a C3PO?
C3PO.
I guess that's a funny. No.
No.
But well, that's talking on the inspector. But that's on this topic, and I'm starting to think of where all the hotels are in Smith County and where the pools are at, hotels and HOAs. You mentioned apartment complexes. And as you start to think about them, then you're going to notice them more.
Yeah.
Which makes me transition now to how things were 12 years ago when I started as a NetHealth employee compared to now. 12 years ago, didn't really see that many food trucks here in Smith County. I don't know if food trucks were even a thing in Smith County 12 years ago as compared to now. It's like if there's any kind of community event, health fair, party, concert, like it's mandatory there's going to be a food truck. It's not mandatory, everybody, but it's expected that there will be a food truck. And you see food trucks
everywhere. And so with food trucks, I kind of taken that department under my wing. So it's kind of like my baby in a way. So with mobile food units, it can be very tricky, right? And I tell people this, like,
so yes. before you go into it, so mobile food unit, how is that different than the term food truck?
I'm make sure everybody thing. Gets it. So there's a food truck and a food trailer, right? So do you haul it with the truck? Is it a trailer or is it just a one whole truck? So to make it more generalized, we say mobile food unit.
To cover both. Whether it's a trailer being pulled.
Food trucks and food trailers.
Okay.
Yeah, but a lot of people use the term food trucks, even though they're trailers. But to be more politically correct, we'll say mobile food units.
So I'll see. There's all kinds. I'll see people pulling a trailer with a pit.
Yeah.
Smoke a barbecue. So they count as a mobile food unit.
That's a mobile food unit. They might not be able to pass as a yearly, but we can at least get them strained out with a temporary.
And I'll see individuals pushing the ice cream cart at parks.
Exactly.
That count as a mobile food unit?
A limited ice cream packaging push cart, it's still a mobile food unit. Or same when you know how outside Lowe's and Home Depot, there was that
hot dog hamburger, like the New York
style
exactly. setup.
Yeah, so mobile food unit as well. So it just generalizes all the units under one umbrella. That way we're not just saying food trucks, food trailers, push cart, weenie truck, or
that's
something.
The category, the overall category being
yeah, the
mobile
overall
food
category.
Units.
Correct.
I got you now. Okay.
So with that, mobile food units, and this is one thing I tell a lot of people, yes, a mobile food unit can be cheaper than a brick and mortar, but it's can be more intense in terms of stress and labor, just because there's a lot that goes into it.
And then just to update everybody, brick and mortar, this is the physical,
your
McDonald's, your Chick-fil-A, Wendy's, Whataburger.
Yeah, whether it's a dine-in restaurant or a fast food restaurant or a bakery.
You said four walls earlier.
Yeah, like if they have like the four walls, they're considered a brick and mortar.
Okay.
That's what we would label those under. So you have brick and mortar, you have mobile food units, and then you have temporary setups.
So but going back to what you were saying, it may be more cost it may not be more cost effective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
to do a mobile food unit compared to a brick and mortar.
Correct. Yeah, so a brick and mortar, I mean, you're looking at spending like at least minimum $100,000, right? Just to get the rent of a building or purchasing a building, and then plus furniture, plus the equipment, labor for employees. You're not just going to have
getting
one employee.
It fully operational.
Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of money. I mean, I see people going up to $1 million just spending on a restaurant. For a mobile food unit, you're not going to go that high at all. Cause, I mean, you're purchasing the trailer. But with that, you know, where brick and mortar, you only have to get one permit. I mean, if you're in the city limits, yeah, you have to get a city building or what you call
a certificate of occupancy.
Yes, the CO, the certificate of occupancy. That's inside the city limits. But overall, with NetHealth, you're only having to get one permit. Same thing with the mobile food unit. You have to get one permit. But here's the catch. Every single county or jurisdiction had its own health department. So let's say you decide to go to Cherokee County, right? Let's say Jacksonville. That's going to be a whole nother permit. Let's say you want to go to Palestine or inside Anderson County. That's a whole nother permit.
So this is a really important point, folks. So we spoke about this on the first episode, how public health can be structured differently depending on the jurisdictional lines that you're crossing across Texas. So the way things might flow in McLennan County versus here in Smith County, it's like you're going to have to contact that local health department
exactly
and ask some questions.
That's
the nature of the beast.
Point to bring up that it actually becomes a good thing for you to purposely contact the health department that covers whatever city or whatever county you're wanting to operate a mobile food unit, or you want to open a brick and mortar restaurant, or whether you're wanting to do this in Longview or Jacksonville or Marshall or Athens or Sulphur Springs.
Because you do have food truck businesses who obviously do tours.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. Of the state. You know?
Oh, yeah, there's multiple. I mean, that even come outside the state of Texas.
Yeah.
That want to come to East Texas or Tyler specifically.
And they got
to
plan out their trip months ahead of time.
Exactly.
So let's use next month, the Red Dirt Festival as an example.
So that's a good example because there's multiple vendors coming down from Texas. It's like the best barbecue vendors of Texas, right? So with them, it's a little different. Because they all have a brick and mortar that they come from, right? So we're not as harsh with them because they already bring their food from a permitted facility. So we just ask for their permits and their inspection reports from their brick and mortar from where they're from. And so therefore, it's a lot easier process for them to cook inside their pits here at the downtown.
So if they're outside of Smith County, let's say whether they're in a different city in Texas, whether they're from Houston compared to somebody that's from Arkansas.
It'll be a little bit easier for them because we ask for a Texas sales tax. Now, let's say someone from Arkansas wants to come in.
Or Louisiana. Outstate.
They're going to have a Texas sales tax for their business. Because, of course, Uncle Sam is going to want to get his he wants to get his cut. So for us, we just want to make sure that they do have the proper paperwork. But for something like that, for let's say Red Dirt, that's what we call a temporary application because they're only going to be here for one day. And they could be here up to 14 consecutive days if they wanted to. For example, the fair, there's people coming from all over the nation. I mean, people coming from Minnesota, coming from New York.
So you're referring to the East Texas State Fair.
Yeah, the East Texas. So for the September. East Texas State Fair, correct. That one, they're actually there for 10 consecutive days. So they have to get a permit for that. I believe our permit is $75 for 1 and 3 consecutive days and $15 a day after the additional.
So what if I wanted to start my own side hustle? Terrence Eights Incorporated. You can tell I hadn't thought about the name yet.
Yeah.
And I want to I want to get a food trailer, and mm-hmm. I want to sell every Saturday.
Yeah.
So it's not consecutive days.
Yeah. So but from
that
there,
will still be a temporary.
So that would be the next question. Do you want to sell every single Saturday for the rest of the year, or do you want to sell just every Saturday for the next 2 months? Right. So if you do a temporary, first of all, you would have to have a coordinator application ahead of time. So that takes 2 weeks. That we normally accept it within 2 weeks before you get a late fee. And for the temporary vendor, which would be yourself, we require it mm-hmm. within 7 days. And we won't accept anything within 72 hours. So within 3 days of the event.
Okay.
So generally, you're allowed to have up to 12 without requiring a commissary. But if I could recommend something, I would recommend you get the yearly permit. Because cost effective, that one would cost you about $325 compared to the $75 every time you apply.
Okay, so y'all check this out. Let me break down what Jonathan just described. So he was giving me the description, and one key phrase that you said, it would be more cost effective. Like you're trying to help me out.
Yeah, I'm trying to help you out.
You're looking out for me, for my business interests.
Yeah. Why do you think I want to get my master's in business administration? I want to be able to help out my community as much as I can.
And because, you know, Uncle Sam's going to get his cut.
Of course. Yeah, Uncle Sam always has to get his cut. And I'm not trying to help out Uncle Sam.
There's one message y'all take away from this interview. Uncle Sam's going to get his
cut. Uncle Sam, regardless of what you do, Uncle Sam's going to get his cut.
But the different levels of how you work, how you and your coworkers assist temporary food operators to be able to be financially viable and successful, whether it's a one day only temporary event mm-hmm. or whether it's a multi-day temporary event, whether it's going to be 7 days, mm-hmm. 10 consecutive days, 14 consecutive days, or whether it's going to be once every so often, or they're going to be there on a regular basis, maybe mm-hmm. better do an annual permit.
It's better for them to do an annual, because if you do an annual, then you could park wherever you want. Of course, there's restrictions, right? So on top of our net health permit, some cities may require another permit on top of that. For example, City of White House, within their city limits, they require you to get a permit with them. Same thing with Lindo. If you want to park inside city limits of Lindo, they also require another permit on top of that. Inside city limits of Tyler, you're okay. But the city says if you're going to park in a city-owned property, such as a park or downtown, you have to make sure you get with the city to ask permission to do so. Because there might be events, and you definitely don't want to.
You can't just pull up and set up just anywhere just because you feel like it.
Exactly. So there's four people you got to please whenever you have a yearly permit. One, obviously, Net Health, Health Department. Got to please us. We got to have all the paperwork you need. Second is going to be the fire marshal, right? So fire marshal is going to look at your propane tank. They're going to look at your electrical. They're going to look at your generator, your extinguishers, all that good stuff, your vent hood with suppression system.
And then for everybody, the fire marshal is usually a different person to contact separate from the fire department.
So you contact the City of Tyler Fire Department. We'll give you that phone number, you know, once we cross that line. So for that, you want to make sure you give them a contact and you set up an appointment. But for the most part, it's normally the same fire marshal that will do it. And then third, we have the property management or the property owner of where you're going to be parking at. Of course, you know, if you're going to park in front of a strip, then you want to make sure you get with the property owner, because some stores may not like that there's competition right there where you're at, especially if there's like a restaurant, you have a food truck parked right mm-hmm. in front of it, right? So you want to make sure that you have permission from them, and especially since there needs to be a restroom within 500 feet of your unit.
But in some instances, there are certainly businesses that would encourage food trucks.
Oh, yeah. There's some that will actually pay you to come out and promote their business while selling.
Yeah. If you folks listening, if y'all go on our website under our environmental health under services and you pan over to temporary permits. It actually says on our page, it says operating a mobile food business is the most complicated type of permit to hold.
Yes.
It says because there is no reciprocity between jurisdictional lines, it is the responsibility of the operator to know what the local laws are in the desired location you wish to serve your food and beverages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like right at the top there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a big, and there's some things that you got to oversee
and
yourself.
And it's not very mainstream. I mean, everybody has different scenarios, mm-hmm. which let me talk about that here shortly. Because the fourth thing is going to be the city in which you're parking in, right? Remember how I was telling you, City of Lindell may require this, City of Tyler might mm-hmm. require that, White House may require this and that. And that leads on to your point, you know, it's up to the operator to do their research. Yeah, they can talk to us all day. Well, I'll give you an earful. Sure, I'll sit down with you. But by the end of the day, it's up to the operator to actually do their research and make sure they have all the adequate stuff they need to begin that business.
So really taking ownership of your business, mm-hmm. you know, taking pride in, you know,
absolutely.
Your own establishment. It's like Net Health and our sanitarians are here to help you mm-hmm. to facilitate that growth, you know, and to ensure that you're doing things properly. But that ownership is I think, is a pretty key important mm-hmm. part.
So those four people to please that you mentioned, so you said –
Health
you want to make sure you talk with Net Health, with our mm-hmm. Environmental Health Department, then the city.
Oh, Fire Marshal.
Or the Fire Marshal. Mm-hmm. So does it need to go in that order as far as
preferred.
Contact Environmental Health first,
environmental
then
health
the,
first
Fire Marshal
the Fire Marshal
of that city?
So normally
or the Fire Marshal for Smith County?
It'll be the Fire Marshal for the City of Tyler.
For the City of Tyler.
Yeah, those are the ones we'll refer them to.
Okay, so if I'm a mobile food unit that wants to operate outside of the City of Tyler.
Then so they would still need to get with the City of Tyler if they want to get approved through Smith County.
It will still go through the City of Tyler Fire Marshal.
Correct.
Regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to set up in White House or ARP or...
Correct.
Noonday.
Now White House may say, hey, if you want to park here, you need to get inspected from our Fire Marshal. They could definitely say that if they wanted to.
Okay.
But for us, for Net Health, if they want to get approved for Smith County, they have to go through City of Tyler Fire
Marshal. So it's first with Net Health, then the Fire Marshal. Then you said third was the property owner?
Property management.
Property owner or wherever you want to set up.
Where you want to set up.
In Smith County.
In Smith County.
Mm-hmm. And then the fourth person to please?
It's the city.
The actual city mm-hmm. where you will be. So when you're alluding to the city... Could you clarify that? Because
the
broad term saying the city.
Yeah. So that's
the city
limit.
Which department of the city would you need to contact?
So you could contact the Parks and Rec department.
Because when you say, quote unquote, the city.
Yeah. I mean,
like,
city
do
hall.
I call the police?
No, not the popo.
Do I call the non-emergency police? Or
no, you want to get in contact with City Hall.
Okay.
I just couldn't think of the name. But yes, the city. So depending on the city limits, whether it's within City of Lindell, City of White House, City of Tyler, City of Chapel Hill, Flint, you want to make sure you get with a City Hall to make sure you talk to them that it's okay to park within a certain area.
Okay. So I know you've covered many topics of what environmental health does. That's everything, right?
Not even close.
No, there's so much that there's environmental health. Man, we haven't even hit general nuisance. I mean, wastewater. There's so much that goes into that as well. Daycares, there's a whole outlook on how you conduct an inspection as well. When you look at the health and safety of a child, right? Those are what we call the immunocompromised population. Same with the nursing homes. We inspect nursing homes as well, but just the food portion. Of course, you know, when it comes to immunocompromised community, there's certain foods that you are allowed and not allowed to sell. For instance, unpasteurized eggs. You're not allowed to have unpasteurized eggs inside an immunocompromised establishment and sell it undercooked, such as over easy, over medium, anything mm-hmm. like that. Same thing with the steak, right? I love me some medium rare steak. But you can't have that at a daycare or a school or a nursing home because of it's an immunocompromised community.
It would have to be.
I was going to say, is it because They can't chew it.
No, because it's undercooked.
No, I'm just kidding.
So that's why whenever you go.
But it has to be cooked well done or like medium well?
I think it's up to medium well, up to 135. So that's why whenever you go to, like, let's say a steakhouse, you ever look at the menu and there's like an asterisk that has like a consumer advisory? Well, that's there for a reason. That's letting the population know, like, hey, there's some foods that are undercooked. So now it's up to your discretion decide if you want to.
So I
want to
add to that statement. They're undercooked on purpose.
They're undercooked on purpose.
Yeah, so at your own risk.
So like a medium steak or medium rare steak.
That's the.
Technically undercooked. And
they're undercooking
not
it
safe.
For a reason on purpose because that's the culinary decision for that recipe, for that meal, which is different than.
But by putting the disclaimer, it's.
Yeah, so if you get
that's an informed decision. It's informed decision.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, so I want to say that a medium rare steak is cooked like at 125, 120 degrees, something like that. Don't quote me on that. But generally, food should be at 135 or above. So at that point, that steak is no longer safe for you to eat. But as a society, we've kind of evolved to eating rare steak. Rare pieces.
Going tartar.
Yeah, exactly. Tartar.
I personally don't.
That's undercooked. I've
had it cooked. Yeah, I can't do tartar.
Tried a
now I like sushi.
It's all right.
Oh, I like raw fish.
Oh, yeah. Even when it comes to sashimi and raw fish.
Yeah, just straight raw.
There's definitely a consumer advisory on that. Like, whenever you go eat sushi, like when you go to some of these establishments, they'll let you know. Like, hey, consuming undercooked foods can pretty much lead to health hazards. Right? So you that's up to you.
Enjoy at your own risk.
Enjoy at your own risk. Exactly. And those are some of the items that we look for in immunocompromised areas. So daycares, nursing homes, schools, definitely not allowed to have sushi. No undercooked steaks. No unpasteurized eggs.
So Terrence, kind of back to when you asked, you said, is that all? This is another reason we wanted to bring Jonathan on as our first guest, being that he is with our environmental health department. They got a lot to talk about, and we're likely going to have Jonathan back on or even some of our other sanitarians because they're a very content rich department. As I like to tell people, they got plenty to talk about, and we could talk about this stuff for a while,
for days.
Yeah, there's a lot of rabbit holes to go down.
Oh yeah, I've been on the phone with this one guy for like over 2 hours just wanting to know more information on how to open up an establishment. And then we just went deep down a rabbit hole.
It's like, how much time you got?
Hey, you said you'll talk somebody's ear off.
I can talk somebody's ears off if they want to. I mean, just call me and I'll be more than happy to talk to you. If you want to
visit, that could be a new feature that y'all can provide as a service. Listening sessions.
Yeah, listening sessions.
I'm just calling. It's like you can call that toll free Hall & Oates number.
Like, I'm not your therapist, but I'll hear you out. Sure.
But this alludes to what Thomas was mentioning. For those of you listening, if you have questions that generated in your mind listening to this interview, contact us. We want to hear from you. A question that you may have for Jonathan or for another one of our registered sanitarians of the different environments that they coordinate, evaluate, inspect in Smith County, whether it's a mobile food unit, whether you yourself are a temporary food vendor and you're wanting to set up at a church health fair, or if it's at a weekend community event, if it's with pool season coming up soon.
Oh, yeah, if you just want to know some general regulations about a pool, the safety features, yeah, sure.
For sure.
Shoot us a call. Or if you want to open up your own apartment, if you got the money, sure, yeah.
Yeah, start your own brick and mortar restaurant.
Yeah, we will definitely be sure to put Jonathan's contact information and the EH contact information in the show notes. That way you can get linked up with our environmental health department. More specific questions regarding this episode, y'all can shoot over to our podcast email handle, just castingthenet@netphd.org. That's castingthenet@netphd.org. Yeah.
You can also learn more about our Environmental Health Department by visiting our website, mynethealth.org. Environmental Health has a direct phone number.
Yeah, so it's 903-535-0037. You could also shoot us an email at environmentalhealth at netphd.org. Again, that's environmental health at netphd.org.
Another way of contacting Environmental Health, you can go to our Net Health Facebook page and send a direct message.
Oh, yeah.
That has happened before many times.
Slide in our DMs.
You can be, well, I wasn't going to say that. I'm trying to keep, okay, but I guess that's one way to say it.
Slide in the DMs. Ask your questions.
Where Thomas and I, being the public information officers for Net Health, from time to time, we will have, I guess you could say, not necessarily secret shoppers, but citizen surveillance, citizens on patrol may send an email, a DM with photos of a food establishment that they visited, and
And
things may not be on the up and up at that location, and they want to make sure that they inform our environmental health department about what they saw, what they heard. Where there are more, you have non-paid employees.
Yeah, exactly, which is the general population, which if you're listening, please don't be afraid to send us, you know, some pictures or your thoughts about specific restaurants. I mean, we'll be more than happy to hear you out. I know our admin, they take care of a lot of those complaints, which is okay. That's one way we keep a lot of these restaurants in check, right? Because we're not there every single day at these establishments. So as a general population, we would like to know, you know, what's going on a daily basis with these establishments. I know I like to eat out. That's a good thing. But I can't catch every single restaurant every single day.
Right.
So if there's a complaint, please send it our way, either to a direct message on Facebook or environmentalhealth@netphd.org, or simply call our phone number at 903-535-0037.
But this podcast, this is one of several ways we want to get input and feedback from you, the listener, about how you can interact with each of our employees in all of the departments that we have within Net Health, because our main role is to prevent illness, to promote health, and to protect our community. So we need to hear from you so that we can better serve our community.
Sure, sure. And all of our departments, as we say, this, the title of the show is Casting the Net. You know, all of our departments cross over each other in many different aspects. Public health touches everything. This is being recorded currently during the week of National Public Health Week. If you have any additional questions that maybe arose listening to this episode, again, we will put all the contact information in the show notes, and you can reach out to us directly through the podcast, email at castingthenet, or contact our environmental health department, guys. Jonathan, we appreciate you coming on, man, being
appreciate
our first guest.
It's a pleasure. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll definitely try to have you back on. Is there anything that you want to maybe tell the general public that's going on in environmental health department that maybe they should know about?
Yeah, so right now we have a Texas Environmental Health Association. We have our East Texas chapter conference coming up April 12th. So if you are a registered sanitarian or code enforcement officer listening out there, even if you're not from East Texas, we would love to have you join. That's something that's coming up in our EH world.
Fantastic.
Sounds like something that would be said by a president of a chapter.
So speaking of, they call me el presidente because I'm the president of the East Texas chapter.
Man, I should have put that in your intro. I was a big one. I missed that.
No, it's all good. I just became president this year, so it's exciting. It's a whole another level of responsibility, but it's fun. You know, I'm having fun while I'm doing that. I get to travel a little bit more this year, get to go visit more conferences. I get to be a part of something that's bigger, which is great. I've had a lot of fun so far being the president.
Well, again, we really appreciate you coming on, man. We're happy to have you on our team. You're knowledgeable, well-informed. You're the president. Overseeing some, you know, bigger responsibilities. So
I thought that was your nickname just within your household.
No, they just call me Johnny at home.
Just Johnny. Terrence, you got anything else?
So to everybody listening, as I mentioned before, I've been employed at NetHealth for 12 years. these two gentlemen that I'm sharing this podcast with, they are actually celebrating 5 years of employment this year with NetHill. So that goes to say that when you join our public health family, you tend to stay a part of our public health family for many years. You may start as a play cousin, but then you become an actual cousin, and then you become a brother or sister. So we have a very close, tight-knit family here at NetHealth. And you mentioned the responsibility that you now have as El Presidente Johnny.
Yeah, El Presidente Johnny.
And then advance congratulations again on your upcoming new responsibilities, becoming a new father. This is kind of a preview for a future podcast interview with our vital statistics department for birth certificates, which I'm sure you'll be fully aware of after your child is born, that our vital statistics department, they interact and work with doulas and midwives. So we have individuals in Smith County that plan to have home births. But what I'm getting back to is once you get back home, the baby's back home, the first night, you'll kind of, you'll know you won't probably get a full night's sleep. Yeah. And that's to be expected.
It's crazy you bring that up. I was asking my mom the other day. I'm like, hey, mom, you know, what do I do once I have the baby and we bring it home? She's like, oh, amigo, you know, you'll figure it out. I'm like, that's such a generic answer. Like, what do you expect me to do with that? But yeah, no, I'm super excited, you know, for this next chapter in my life. Very nervous. Like we said earlier, I'm prepared. Mm-hmm. I just don't think I'm ready. But I have no choice but to be ready. So, I mean, cheers to that.
And you will be ready to take naps at a moment's notice. That's another bit of advice I'll give to you. But thank you again for being our first official guest on Casting the Net.
Thank y'all for having me.
And anything else, Thomas?
We appreciate y'all tuning in and get connected. We're currently streaming on Amazon Music and Apple Podcasts and Spotify, so feel free to share. This is our second episode. We've got plenty more coming, guys, so stay tuned.